This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Roddy Jones in for Pack today, and tomorrow our coverage of the Atlantic Coast Conference football kickoff starts about 9 o'clock, by the way. Jim Phillips to the podium in the Commissioners Forum at 9:30. Players and coaches tomorrow from the Coastal Division. Thursday will be from the Atlantic Division, and the coverage from Charlotte unfolds. We'll have guests. We've got all sorts of folks that are going to be there to give you full wall-to-wall coverage right here on the Atlantic Coast Conference Network. Okay, we examined a small group of players who may have been familiar to you from their play a year ago, Roddy, in our opening hour. We're going to expand the list a little bit here in the 8 o'clock hour, and then Eric McClain's going to join us at 8:30, and we're going to go through some of his positional rankings. Yeah. Mac has once again stepped out on that wire, Roddy, here in July to rank certain positions. And we're going to get with that, too, at the bottom of the hour. I'm looking forward to that. But this list of the fans' guide of ACC players, you cultivated a good bit of this. Take me through this next group we're going to see. And it's going to start with a guy who folks know, but how much did they see of Brennan Armstrong at Virginia a year ago?
Well, first off, with this list, I got to give a lot of credit to the Brain Trust up in Bristol for suggesting the vast majority of these names. And when I mean vast majority, I mean like vast majority. but then let's talk about Brennan Armstrong. Brennan Armstrong obviously got the ball for Virginia early in the season, mm-hmm. but went through some injury struggles over the course of the year. Remember, we saw Ira Armstead take snaps at quarterback. We saw Lindell Stone take snaps at quarterback. We obviously saw Keaton Thompson take snaps at quarterback. Four different guys played extended minutes for Virginia, but it's going to be Brennan Armstrong, and this offense is going to go as he goes. And there's just something about Brennan Armstrong. So I tried to distill it to what it is, and I think it's just that moxie. He's got that swagger, the way he carries himself, that you know he has a belief in his abilities and his capabilities. Back to the days where he was wearing number 98 for the Cavaliers, when he came in the game, he was not afraid of the moment. He's got excellent athleticism. He's a big guy. He's got really nice arm strength. The one area that he needs to improve the most is the interceptions, 11 interceptions last year. So just the gunslinger mentality, knowing the situations to take those chances, knowing the situations when not to, when to tuck it and just run instead of maybe trying to force a ball. Those are some of the things that he's going to need to work on. But for a first-year starter last year who went through some injury issues, he had an excellent first season, and I'd expect for him to take a step next year. The completion percentage was up towards the end of the season. If that continues and he's over that 60 to 65% range, it's going to be dangerous for Virginia.
Roddy, if you're Brennan Armstrong, do you look at the tape from the 1-3 start to pull some things? I mean, you had some success, right? I mean, you had some wins, but it was a fight early. Do you go back to that tape, or are you just living on the end of last year?
If I'm Brennan Armstrong, you go back and you look at every throw from last season. You look at every play from last season, every check you made. You look at everything. How did you improve from that 1-3 start to the finish that they had? And where is there still room for improvement? What mistakes did you make early on that you were still making at the end? Because that's where the growth is going to come. Those are the areas that you really need to focus. You're not going back and looking to see how much you got better. You're looking to go and see what were the mistakes that were consistent throughout the year and where did I try and overcompensate in some areas. So, yeah, I think you go back and you look at everything. You look at it objectively. You look at it not necessarily as a full game, you know, going back and saying, all right, what could I have done on 3rd and 12 from the 12-yard line? No, you're looking at it more in context in terms of all the third downs. How did I perform? Not necessarily just that game, just that situation. You're trying to more generalize it.
By the way, when you talk about Armstrong, we mentioned dual threat, Uiagalelei maybe running more for Clemson, those type deals. We'll talk about it with Jeff Sims, I guess, and Georgia Tech in the next couple days. Here's the idea about Brennan Armstrong. He was one of just six quarterbacks in the ACC, in FBS football last year that threw for 200 and ran for more than 60 a game. He's the only guy in the ACC to do it. So when we talk about quarterbacks that are a true dual threat, this is the guy, right? I mean, this is the guy to which all these other guys are going to be measured. Now, they may throw for more yards or what have you, but this is the guy that mixes both of them pretty well.
And here's the thing. He may not duplicate those numbers because he may be asked to do less. Look, Bronco Mendenhall is going to want more of a traditional run game from the running back position, being able to turn around, hand it off so that Brennan Armstrong is not taking those hits. But you're exactly right. He's as good a runner from the quarterback position as any in the league. He's not as fast as Malik Cunningham or Jeff Sims or Jordan Travis. He's not maybe as big and as physical as DJ Uiagalelei or Phil Jurkovec, but he combines both of them in a way that is very hard to duplicate and very effective.
All right, next let's go to Syracuse. When last year started, the Orange opened in Chapel Hill, and Sean Tucker was not even listed in a remote dress list on the depth chart, Roddy.
Yeah, Sean Tucker was one of the big surprises of the season, and I say that in a very positive way. Remember, the top two running backs for Syracuse coming into next year both opted out. They are both back this season, so we'll see how they split up the football. But Sean Tucker became a really good back for the Orange. This is a guy that showed great patience, great balance, great body control, the ability to break tackles. He was excellent in their zone game last season. But I think the thing that really stood out to me was his vision, his balance, and his ability to make people miss. He had three games over 100 yards last season. And another guy that battled some injuries, got injured in that Clemson game. Remember, he had Cooper Lutz taking all of the snaps at the end of that Clemson game that you and I did. But when you look at what Sean Tucker was able to do for that offense, he was the most consistent part of it for stretches, especially when they started to go to that outside zone scheme. He's got great vision, and I think his strength, as he continues to improve that, we're going to see him as one of the guys that is sort of a broken tackle machine. You know, I think he's got the ability to break tackles in the same way that like a Javonte Williams did. Maybe not the same burst down the field, maybe not the same long speed, but in terms of build, that's kind of who he reminds me of, a very recent example of who I think Sean Tucker can get to be.
I know we're a long way from Thursday when the Atlantic gets to showcase in Charlotte, and I know Syracuse will not be top of mind when we come to the Atlantic based on the last couple of years. But remember this, 80% of their production returns, Roddy, from a year ago.
Right.
That's got to account for something.
It does. And Wes, let's remember with Syracuse, you had a guy in Chris Blake who was a transfer from Florida who not only was ineligible, but he was also injured for much of the season. You had a guy in Chris Elmore who was a fullback that got placed at left guard to start the year. I mean, this was an offensive line that had injuries and departures, and then you had to shuffle some things around. So they were really trying to figure things out. Tosh Harris showed on the outside he's dangerous. Yeah. Sean Tucker showed that he is a really good player. And what Tony White did with that defense last year in a COVID year, that defense was pretty stingy at times, particularly in the secondary, even after losing Andre Sisco. So while Syracuse is not going to be top of mind, I'd expect improvement from Dino Babers' squad, especially if that offensive line gets a little bit better.
There you go. All right, let's move to Boston College. And Phil Jurkovec's on this list, Roddy? Guys with limited tape? I saw a lot of tape of Phil Jurkovec, didn't I?
The qualification was less than a year of tape, Wes. Less than a year. So while we saw a lot of Phil Jurkovec a year ago, there's a lot more to see. And I thought he had to be on this list. Once, again, the brain trust in Bristol had him inserted in here. I completely agreed because I think there's more there to see from Phil Jurkovec. Let's not forget, another guy, shoulder injury during the season, had to go through a lot of the second half, middle second half of the season with a bum wing. So there's more there. And Phil Jurkovec became must-see TV in the ACC. Did not do it in the way like some of the burners did, but you could not tackle this guy once you got in the backfield. If you don't believe me, go back and watch the Duke game from last year. Victor Dimakaji and Chris Rumpf lived in the Boston College backfield. They could not bring Phil Jurkovec down. His elusiveness, his strength, his just overall poise in the pocket. He's got excellent arm strength. There's a throw that he makes on the run, just whipping it. He's rolling to his left, whips it downfield. Perfect strike to Zay Flowers. He's got all the physical tools. You can see why he's getting some, you know, day one, day two NFL draft hype. Phil Jurkovec is a guy that is going to be considered one of the top quarterbacks in this league and maybe the entire country by the time it's all said and done. So while we all know, just wanted to remind people, the guy up in Boston College, he can ball.
All right, next guy on the list. He's right here on the cover of Phil Steele, there. Brian Brazee is on this list of guys with limited available tape. What tape there was of Brian Brazee last year was pretty daggone good, by the way. He was the ACC Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. And I want to lean in and tell people, Brian Brazee told Wes and I in the spring that he now knows what he's doing out there on the field. He did all that last year with limited understanding of college football. I mean, this guy was incredible a year ago. And when we talked to him, he's like, yeah, you know, I got bigger, faster, stronger. But the biggest thing is now I understand college offenses.
I know what I'm doing.
My jaw dropped. Like, what do you mean now you know what you're doing? He was just playing off instinct as a true freshman. But he's got excellent size. He's got great length, prototypical size and length for an interior defensive lineman. The burst, the athleticism, and the fact that now he's going to be able to understand what a offense wants to do to him, whether he's getting trapped, whether a guy's going to pass set, where he can get pre-snap reads and anticipate what a play is going to be. Look, there's not often where I'm like, hey, this guy is going to be someone you have to keep your eye on every single play. But in terms of what Brian Brazee was telling us in the spring about where his understanding was and where it is now, just watch him on every play because it's going to be scary. Yeah. He's got guys around him where you can't double team him. If you do that, then Tyler Davis and Miles Murphy and Xavier Thomas are going to get all the tackles. Like he could dominate the entire league. He could dominate college football this season. He's got that kind of physical ability and that understanding. And if there's one area that he needed to improve on from a year ago, he told us. He was like, hey, I played high the entire season. I got to work on my pad level. And again, we're like, I mean, yeah, sure, I guess. But it was pretty good last year. So we will see with Brian Brazee. It's going to be scary.
Pittsburgh had a guy who was as explosive as any rookie in the league a season ago. Jordan Addison was sensational, Roddy.
Yeah, he was. A guy is fourth in the league in receiving. And another, you know, Dracovic, Brazee, Addison, guys that we saw a lot a year ago. But again, less than 1 year of film. So as you get in, the question is, how are these guys going to continue to emerge and evolve? And I think for Jordan Addison, the first thing that stands out is his speed and elusiveness in the open field. Had some punt returns for Pitt a year ago, kind of became Kenny Pickett's go-to guy. His ability to take the top off of defense, hit those big plays for the Panthers was absolutely huge. The injury that he suffered a year ago, that's going to be something that he'll have recovered from. But his ball skills, his concentration, his competitiveness, you know, he made some plays in that NC State game that we did, tight catches and tight windows. I think that's what stands out. It's just going to come down to the consistency. Can you get 7, 8, 9 catches a game from him? And I think Mark Whipple and this offense is really going to try and do that. They're really going to focus on Jordan Addison because he's one of the best receivers in this conference, bar none. I'm excited to see what he does with another year in this offense with the same quarterback, with a guy like Taysier Mack, Lucas Kroll around him to take some of the pressure off, take some of the attention off. How dangerous can he be? So Jordan Addison, a guy that tailed off towards the end of last year, but when he was good last year, he was excellent.
Roddy, let's go to a guy who should have been a senior in high school a year ago and then elected to enroll early and play. A lot of Carolina fans were questioning, why is this guy not on the field more early in the year? But by the end of the year, I think they understood what Mack Brown and Jay Bateman had hoped for. And don't ever forget who this guy's position coach is. When Dre Bly is coaching corners, you're in good hands. And Tony Grimes showed at the end of the year, there's a lot to be excited about this fall for him in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, I mean, look, the guy was a 5-star recruit for a reason. Now, did anybody expect him to show up his senior year of high school instead of waiting to the year after? I don't think so, and especially play the way that he did. It's absolutely incredible. And look, Jay Bateman and Mack Brown early in last season, I think a lot of it was just trying to get him acclimated, but he's got all the tools, the athleticism, the length, the ability to compete for the ball. That's what you want to see from a corner. Do you have the speed? Do you have the size? And then do you have the competitiveness to say, I'm not getting beat today. That's not happening. And Tony Grimes has all of those things. You could see on the field his confidence grow week in and week out. Four starts, broke up passes, made big plays, had interceptions. Tony Grimes is a star in this league, and they've got some good ones for UNC in that backfield. Storm Duck's still there. Kyler McMichael still there. But Tony Grimes is going to be the guy that gets most of the attention. He is, you know, when you look up cornerback in the dictionary now, you want a guy that's long, fast, competitive. Tony Grimes is all three of those. So I know I'm excited to see him. I'm sure you are as well, Wes.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. And he gets quite a test. Remember now, opening night, Blacksburg.
Yeah.
On that Friday night.
Yeah.
You know, Tony Grimes and Trey Turner, that'd be worth your ticket price. Sit tight. More to come on this list. In fact, we're going to finish up the list ahead of Eric McLean at the bottom of the hour with his positional rankings. Again, no controversy, no conflict there at all in any of that.
I'm sure we'll agree. We'll all agree. And Twitter, I'm sure, has agreed with everything.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk to Mac about that coming up at 8:30. But next, we got the final four guys we're going to keep an eye on. Wait a second. Oh, I didn't think Sam Howell would be on this list. Ah. We'll see who else we find among these in the film Don't Lie next.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham's Tuesday show rolls on. ACC kickoff coverage starts tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, wall-to-wall from the Westin Hotel. The fabulous Westin Hotel will be in Uptown Charlotte.
Yeah.
Kelsey Riggs, Jordan Cornette, Coach Rick, Eric McLean, E.J. Manuel. Once again, Mac will be chasing E.J. Manuel on that clothes department, Roddy. Looking forward to that.
Man. Yeah, that will be must-see TV. You know, these two guys have not been on set together in a while. Mm-hmm. How's the battle going to work out?
That's not going to go.
EMAC trying to compete with that first round money. I don't know if you can compete with that first round money, Wes.
But we'll talk to him at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk at the bottom of the hour, see what he's got going, see what he's got planned. All right, let's get to this next list of players we've been talking about. This has been a fun topic, by the way. I think we've had a lot of good discussion come through on this. The thing about it, now, when we get to these last four guys, Roddy, there's more here, but we're going to start with Devin Leary, and I think the injuries have something to do with one of the reasons he's here, right?
Absolutely. So in a perfect scenario for Devin Leary last year, in a normal year, he's the starting quarterback from day one against Virginia Tech. And he finishes out the season, and maybe he's not on this list, or he's on this list for the same reason that Phil Jurkovec is, just that he started one game or 1 year for NC State. But because last year was 2020 and Devin Leary had some bad luck, he's in the protocol for much of the beginning of camp, doesn't start against Virginia Tech, plays a little bit at the end, is still really getting back into their swing of things, starts a couple of games for NC State, plays well, and then breaks his leg. So it's one of those situations where Devin Leary just had about the worst 2020 that you could have on a football field because of circumstances out of his control. That being said, go back and watch the last 2 minutes of that Pitt tape, and you will see why you are excited about Devin Leary. His ball placement with the back shoulders to Devin Carter and Emeka Emezi, his poise. This was against Virginia Tech when he came into the game. Driving his team down the field and scoring for that 1-point victory against Pitt, the moxie, the overall poise, that's what really impressed me. And you and I looked at each other after that game, and we were like, this guy's a dude. Yeah. This guy can absolutely play in this league and play at a high level. His connection with Emezi, Carter, Thayer Thomas, and then the tight end position. Last year it was Kerry Angeline. That was really impressive to me. His just overall feel for that back shoulder and the way he operated that offense in the 2 minute, I thought was fantastic. So I'm really excited to see Devin Leary this season in a full year of work.
Here's the other piece, too. Of all the 18 quarterbacks that had more than 100 attempts last year in the ACC, this is kind of a stat to keep in mind. If you had more than 100 attempts last year passing, there were 18 guys in the ACC that did. Only one quarterback coming back had a higher QBR than Devin Leary, and that was DJ Uiagalelei. I mean, so when you talk about an impact guy, this is the guy. And, oh, by the way, you know, here we are. You just rolled off Carter, Amezi, Thayer Thomas, Porter Rooks. I mean, there are plenty of guys now that can catch the rock in Raleigh. Here's the other thing, too.
Yep.
Bam Knight, pretty good offensive line. There's still some things to be sorted out there. This is why they're on the two line behind Clemson for me on the ballot. I think they got
Ricky Person, Jordan Henderson. Like you're talking about a lot of guys. Excuse me, Jordan Houston. You're talking about a lot of guys that can really play for NC State. A lot of familiarity. And by the way, this is Tim Beck's first full offseason with NC State as well. Let's not forget that. Like he was a first year coordinator a year ago. So a full year. Who knows where this offense can go? They won some close games last year. I thought Bailey Hockman did an excellent job of gritting out some wins. I think they're going to be able to win some shootouts with Devin Leary under center this year.
All right, let's go back to Clemson. We're going to stay on defense. And again, this falls under the category of a year or less of tape. And this guy was third team All-ACC, and we're talking about Miles Murphy. We've already told you about Brazee, so let's just throw another log on the fire here. Here's Miles Murphy, right, Roddy?
Yeah, and look, having done, you pulled out your card earlier, the Clemson spring game. Like we could do some guys that are coming in that we haven't even seen tape of. We could have done that as well because they've got some excellent players who are going to introduce themselves to the ACC this year, just like Miles Murphy did a year ago. Third team All-ACC, another guy who, like Brazee, gets thrust in as a freshman. The depth on the defensive line isn't what Clemson expected it to be for a number of reasons, but he stepped in and performed admirably. A guy who's got great size and length off the edge, the ability to bend, the tenacity to get after the quarterback. I mean, the feel that he has for pass rush, as he develops those pass rush moves, the initial move, the counter, going in with a plan, he's going to be as good a pass rusher that Clemson has had in a while. And by the way, they had a number four overall pick as a defensive end a couple of years ago. And I think Miles Murphy has that kind of talent. Does he need to improve to get there? Absolutely. But coming into next season, you know, the hype that Kayvon Thibodeau is getting this year, if Miles Murphy has the season that we anticipate him having, he'll have that kind of hype going into next season because he is straight out of central casting, what you want from a defensive end, from a speed, athleticism, flexibility standpoint, his feel for pass rush, just as he develops those moves, develops that plan, he's going to be scary. And by the way, we talked about it with Brazee. You can't double team the guy. You can't slide to the guy because you're going to leave a mismatch somewhere else on the Clemson offensive line, or excuse me, on the Clemson defensive line. So he's going to benefit from that as well.
All right. We're going to finish with two offensive guys that kind of really fit the bill here for guys you're going to need to know. North Carolina lost plenty of talent at wide receiver. We all know that, right? Yesterday, David Hale was with us, talked about Josh Downs being a star. I don't disagree with that. But Choffrey Brown's on the way too, Roddy. That's a guy who could really, really be on the back end of some Sam Howell stuff here this fall.
I think if you're North Carolina, you are anticipating Choffrey Brown to step into the role of his older brother, Diami Brown, and be the same guy. They look very similar. They have been used in very similar ways. Mm-hmm. The deep ball and the fact that he's learned from Diami Brown throughout his life, but certainly since he's been at UNC, Diami Brown was as good a double move player as there was in the league last year. And really throughout his career, he was excellent in one-on-one situations, great on the deep ball, which is why he was a high draft pick. And Choffrey's in that same mold. He's going to be the type of player that takes the top off of defense. He's going to be that deep threat. And I would anticipate Sam Howell looking at Choffrey Brown and saying, hey, look, that looks pretty familiar. It looks just like Diami did for us the past couple seasons. So let's go to him. He's got the speed. He's got the hands. He's obviously got the lineage. I'd expect Choffrey Brown to be a number of receivers that we get to know for UNC this season. Third leading receiver a year ago. You look at Josh Downs, Emory Simmons, and then Choffrey Brown. Bo Corrales is back, by the way.
Bo Corrales
We may not know these guys the way we knew Diami Brown and Daz Newsome. They got some really good players out there, receiver. I'm not worried about North Carolina there.
All right. Last is a lot of tight ends get thrown at you. Will Mallory, Braden Galloway, but James Mitchell at Virginia Tech. How about Jalen Mitchell, who's going to get involved in the ball game at Louisville now? And we're talking about running backs here. A guy who can also bang it away here. And this is a guy that Scott Satterfield pointed out to us, Roddy. He's pretty excited about a big back.
Yeah, so when Javian Hawkins decided that he was not going to finish out the season last year, the question was, all right, who takes those carries? Hassan Hall was banged up, and we really didn't know. Jalen Mitchell, towards the end of the season, stepped up, and he is a bigger back. He's a different player than you saw with Javian Hawkins. Not the home run speed that Hawkins had, but it's a little bit different feel with that big body, that big back presence. You know, he's got some lateral cutting ability. He's got enough speed to get you 20. He may not get you 60, but he'll get you 20. So I think Scott Satterfield is excited about having a true complement to a guy like Hassan Hall, who's going to be more in that Javian Hawkins role. Jalen Mitchell will give you a little bit more downhill presence, maybe a little bit better runner when it comes to the inside stuff. And that's going to make this Louisville offense more varied. A Louisville offense that, if you put the turnovers aside, was pretty good in most areas a year ago. Do they need to improve? Absolutely. And Jalen Mitchell will have to prove that he can do it on a week-in, week-out basis. Had over 100 yards, 168 yards against Wake Forest late in the season last year. But being the guy is different. And when you are the guy, if he ends up being that, how does he respond as a big back that's going to really deliver a lot of punishment? I am interested to see how this offense develops. Is it as much stretch zone as they did in the past with a big back like Jalen Mitchell? I would anticipate so, because it's what Scott Satterfield does. But I think you're going to see more of that inside stuff as well. Getting Jalen Mitchell's shoulder square, getting him downhill, making him a one-cut guy, and having him get that burst to get you 20 to 25 on the big plays.
Let me also add this. We've talked a lot about Louisville, and we've talked about – but – you got to remember, Renato Brown, Adonis Boone, Caleb Chandler also back in the offensive line for Scott Satterfield. That's a huge get in terms of just experience level and familiarity. Marshawn Ford, the tight end of the Cards now, that's a guy who also is a big-time threat, and he'll be here tomorrow.
Find him in the red zone. Got to find him in the red zone.
ACC kickoff coverage starts at 9 o'clock. When we come back, long-awaited Eric McClain and positional rankings. Yes, we're going to go to that. We're going to go to a lot more with EMAC on the eve of the ACC kickoff. Next, Packer and Durham continues.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
All right, welcome back. Tuesday edition of Packer and Durham rolls on. Roddy Jones is in for Mark today. Our coverage of the ACC football kickoff. 7 hours, well, actually 8 hours of it tomorrow, Roddy. Starts at 9 o'clock.
Hydrate, Wes. Hydrate.
Lots of hydrating tomorrow now. One big coffee, lots of hydration.
Big water bottle.
Speaking of hydration, friends, let's bring on Eric McClain. Speaking of hydration, because nobody cares, work harder. Eric McClain is here.
That's right.
Says so right on the shirt this morning. Eric, good morning. Great to see you as always. Look forward to seeing you in Charlotte later tonight. Couple things here. Have you called Brent Venables for a loan, small interest loan perhaps, to see if he'd be willing to kind of finance
No interest.
A
it's a no interest loan.
It's a no
Just
interest
let,
loan.
Let me hold
okay.
a dollar, right. BV. Let me hold a dollar. That's all I need.
Two and a hook million, Eric, to coach defense.
Hey, he's the best. He's the best in the country. He's probably the best ever. And he's happy at Clemson. So when you get paid like that, you have a great family environment. Why would you want to go anywhere else, man? He's a legend, and I'm happy Clemson did that because he deserves it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So EMAC, we in our last couple segments, we've been talking about guys that have less than a year of tape that we're looking forward to seeing, and we did talk to Clemson guys, and we talked three Clemson guys: DJ Uiagalelei, Brian Brzee, Miles Murphy. I want to focus on those two defensive linemen because you have a unique perspective as an offensive lineman. When Brian Brzee told us that he really didn't understand offenses a year ago just because he was a freshman. He was young, and now that understanding is going to be there. As an offensive lineman, how much harder is it when a defensive lineman understands what you're trying to do to him, and how do you combat a guy with that size, speed, strength, who now has the understanding to go with it?
Yeah, it's one thing to be a physical freak and to just be an athlete, and you can kind of, you know, beat those guys with, again, intelligence and knowing that, okay, I know where the play's going, he doesn't. So you kind of figure out ways to get the edge on those guys. But when you add that second piece and they can read plays and they look at the formation and they know, okay, when X player lines up this way, I know the ball's coming right here. Mm. All bets are off. And when you have a physically gifted young man like Brian Brisee, and now he knows where the ball is going, he knows the technique that if he feels a guy coming from the left side as well, it's probably going to be a downhill power play, and he can evade that. I mean, good luck. I mean, have fun. I'm not sure how you're going to stop it. I think he's a guy that, Roddy, you hit the nail on the head. He can dominate college football. I think he truly can step up this year and be the number one defensive tackle in the country. He's my number one defensive tackle in the ACC as a true sophomore. Mm. He's that good.
All right. Speaking of your positional rankings, you have already started the social media cavalcade on this topic. And I'm going to jump right in because you've done most of the offense. I think you've done all the offense, best I can tell. I think you got guards and centers if you want to do that. That may still be to come. But I know you've done all the skill side, okay? And I want to start at quarterback. You've got Sam Howell 1, DJ 2, De'Eriq King 3, Phil Jurkovec 4, and Brennan Armstrong 5. Now, I can feel the hate Twitter coming from Pitt right now. I mean, I can feel it. I can feel it coming from Winston-Salem. Where are we going here?
Yeah, let me tell you guys. Number 1 through 4, I don't think there's any, there's no argument. That's who it is. You might be able to switch them around a little bit if you're, you know, a big De'Eriq King fan and think that he should be 1 or 2, but 1 through 4, those names aren't changing. That's who it is. And those guys are that good. They're that talented. You know, they have all the works. 5 was something that I probably spent, honestly, 2.5 hours on, just looking at 3 or 4 different guys. And ultimately, there's a little bit of projection here, but I think Brennan Armstrong's going to have an unbelievable year. And you guys mentioned why earlier. He can be the total dual threat package. He is a guy that can use his legs, use his arm, and just will his team to win. We saw Virginia play without him, very different team. With him, they can hang with anybody. They can play with the North Carolinas. I'm not sure if they can beat a Clemson, but they can play with them, as we saw in that opener at home for the Tigers. So it's going to be an interesting thing to see who can step up. But I will tell you, it was tough not having Kenny Pickett, who I think has unbelievable talent, is going to be a great NFL pro. It was hard to leave him out of the top 5, but it's not a negative to Kenny. It's a positive to what I think Brennan can do. It's not a knock. I think that, you know, people get caught up in these lists and say, hey, look, he hates this guy. That's not true. I just think Brennan can have a special year.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, Mac. Which of these lists was the hardest to put together for 1 through 5? I mean, you talked about the number 5 spot for quarterback. That was tough, but 1 through 4 probably took you all of, you know, 4 minutes. Which of these was the hardest to do from top to bottom?
Yeah, running back was tough. I mean, there's a lot of really good running backs. The fact that I did a top 5 and didn't mention one of the 3, you know, studs for Miami was pretty difficult. Tight end, another position that is just loaded in the ACC. And you see, I mentioned here Ty Chandler, a guy who has yet to play a snap in ACC play. But I spoke to Mac Brown yesterday. He is jacked up to have this guy on the roster. What he can do in North Carolina's offense, they are very, very excited. Again, just being a dual threat guy that can run the ball is great coming out of the backfield as a wide receiver. So I think there's big plans for Ty Chandler to be involved early and often for UNC.
Eric, I got to tell you, there are 2 guys on this list, Chandler being one of them. The other one, Roddy and I talked to a little bit in the spring. I think Mateo Durant has been really kind of overlooked. To me, when you average the numbers he did behind, and again, I'm not trying to slight Duke offensively. We know they had the turnover plague a year ago and all that.
Right.
But Mateo Durant made every rep count to me. He's a guy that was productive, straight up productive. And it's hard to find pure production that's not accentuated by somebody else, skill set, quarterback, whatever the case is. But that's a running back who basically delivered on every yard.
He did, and he was splitting time. So now I'm very excited to see him be the featured back and to be the guy each and every down, and that's why I have him where I did in the rankings. I think, again, ceiling very high for Mateo. He's a great young man, obviously a fantastic student, and by the way, a very good football player. So I agree with you. If we can get him a little bit of help, he's getting a couple offensive linemen back from injury. They're going to have a dual threat at quarterback. You know, we've heard so much from Cutcliffe and this staff about how excited they are to just add this, you know, other little intricacy to their offense and being able to have a quarterback that can run and really be a dynamic factor. That's only going to open up lanes for your running back and really cause more opportunity, you know, for them to get out in space.
All right, let's talk some hog mollies. We got to talk the big guys because I am as excited about this group of tackles as I think any position. You look at Ike Ekwonu, Zion Nelson, a guy like Luke Tenuta, Jordan McFadden at Clemson. Talk to me about the offensive linemen and what you think the potential is for the group that you listed in the top five.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of first rounders there for sure. I think Big Ike is a guy that he's just disgusting, y'all. He really is. He is a guy that wants to cause pain each and every time that he is on the field, and he does it. He delivers. I mean, to see the way that he finishes, obviously he is taught extremely well, but to go out and do it, very excited to see Big Ike this year. Zion, I mean, a guy that 2 years ago, y'all, when we watched this, this is the play right here. I did about 12 tapes on this. Just
finish
burying
him.
A guy. It's beautiful
finish
to
him.
See that. Yeah, I mean, he's a stud. But going back to Zion, I mean, he is a player that 2 years ago when we launched the network, he opens against Florida, and I believe he gave up 5 of their 10 sacks that game. And we were all just like, this kid's not ready. There's no shot. He's transformed his body. He looks fantastic. He's a guy that, again, could sneak into the first round of the NFL draft just because of his nimbleness, athleticness, what he can do for a football team. And then you see Jordan, Tyler, and Luke, all very, very solid guys. I think Jordan is going to swing over to the left tackle position and kind of, you know, take the reins there. He's got great footwork, great arm length, a guy that's going to be really, really impactful for the Tigers this year.
All right, Eric, we're going to have the romance of the quarterbacks for the next couple days in Charlotte, and I understand that, and rightly so. I mean, the league brings back 13 starters, essentially guys that started at least a couple ball games. Gunnar Holmberg is the exception. We know Mackenzie Milton is a starter, but he previously started. So it's not like we're, you know, dealing with an unknown there. If healthy, he's going to be fantastic. Jordan Travis at Florida State. I want to get to the productivity and the premium on offensive line play. I mean, Roddy and I just talked about Brown, Boone, and Chandler and the returning, that trio returning at Louisville. Guys that are coming back in offensive line play, and I'm playing to your strength here a little bit, but how valuable have you seen that from a production standpoint? Who is the school that, because of what's happening up front, can maybe turn things around? You mentioned Duke getting some guys back. Does that really make a bigger difference for Gunnar Holmberg? Who are there two or three schools out there you're really going to focus on once the season begins to see just where they are?
Yeah, you know, I think Boston College is my number one because they have so much talent. They have the number one center, the number one guard who probably is still going to play tackle in Zion Johnson. You just saw up there big Tyler Vrabel at tackle. It didn't match up production-wise what you saw a year ago with giving up sacks, not being able to establish any type of run game, which is insane for Boston College. Now that they kind of have had this trial year and a total 180 flip in their offense, and you know maybe where they just weren't comfortable in performing, doing those type of things, throwing the ball 50 times instead of running it 50 times, now I think we're going to see them reach that potential that I believe that they have. And when you look at the players, I think we're going to see that win total go up because of the offensive line, being able to extend plays, being able to keep drives alive. I'm very excited to them. And then NC State, another offensive line that I think is very underrated. Grant Gibson at center, one of the best in the country. I just released my top five centers and had to put him at three, which is crazy. I mean, that guy could end up being an All-American and be a really solid player. And then, of course, Big Icky. So those are the two that I think in the Atlantic that are super just undervalued, underrated, that could really be big. And then, of course, Miami, you know, in the Coastal. Can they protect De'Arik King? That has been such a woe for Miami for so long, poor offensive line play. It should be a strength this year with all the guys that they have coming back.
All right, Emac, I want to ask you about another team in the Coastal. You know, we talked about North Carolina. We're going to talk a ton about Miami. I want to ask you about your perspective on Virginia Tech, because Virginia Tech returns one of the best centers in the conference in Brock Hoffman. You've got Luke Tenuta back, who is on your tackles list. You've got a guy like Silas Janzy that's played a bunch. You've got Lasita Smith. They've got a transfer coming in on the offensive line as well. And they've got some talent on offense. What's your perspective and expectations for Virginia Tech as we get into media days and then get into the season?
The biggest thing, I know the offensive line is going to be good. And I know the offensive line is going to be able to road grade. They're going to be able to pass protect. They're going to be solid. We just have to see consistent performances from the quarterback position. That has been the Achilles heel of Virginia Tech these last 2-3 years. And just say, okay, we've got a guy in Hendon Hooker who's doing great, and then 1 week, he just doesn't. So Braxton Burmeister has to step up, say, hey, I'm the guy. I'm going to be here week in and week out. There's no competition. There's no quarterback controversy. It's me. I'm quarterback one. And go out there and dominate, because quite frankly, I think he has that ability. I think he can use his legs really to his advantage. He has a great arm. And now maybe the security of that quarterback one. That's going to be the biggest thing for me for Virginia Tech offensively. And then, of course, defense, it's just, it has not been what we come to expect from Virginia Tech these last 2 years. I mean, we expect dominance. We expect sacks, turnovers, creating opportunities for your offense. And that just, quite frankly, hasn't been it. So those guys have to step up. Consistency on offense at the quarterback position. And Virginia Tech can get back to big-time bowl games and maybe even some championships.
All right, now, you know, we love EJ, we love Coach, but we're pulling for you tomorrow and Thursday. We're pulling for you. You know we're pulling for you, right?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Now, Roddy alluded to this earlier. Tell him, Roddy.
Emac's going to bring it, but Emac, like, you are swimming with the sharks when it comes to the clothing. So that first round money on one side, you got that coach money on the other side. Like, we are pulling for you because you always bring it. Right. Fashion sense.
Let me just tell y'all something. I am never worried about walking in any room when it comes to my clothing. I'll be just fine. Y'all don't worry about that.
Okay. See? Eric Wood always told us, Emac got O-line confidence, and that's what it takes. Got to have some O-line confidence. There you go. All right, Eric McClain, he'll be part of our coverage tomorrow morning at 9. Safe travels. We'll see you tonight in Charlotte. Thank you for the time. Appreciate it.
No doubt. Can't wait to see you guys. Have a great show.
All right, Eric McClain, sit tight. We've got list. Not like Eric's list. We got like the Bednarik Award, the Maxwell. We got those kind of lists. And they're dotted with ACC players. We're going to come back and talk about that and more. 9 o'clock hour. Okay, we've given you players, but we're also going to give you fun three-game stretches for your team. Now, you've been thinking all about the kickoff, right? Now we're going to give you three games. Where's the most critical stretch for your team during the campaign? We're going to do all that and more. Sit tight, though, when we come back. Bednarik list, watch list, all that coming up. Roddy Jones in for Pack. We continue on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham continue on a Tuesday. Great to have you with us on ACC Network. We're also on SiriusXM ACC 371 and, of course, always streaming on the ESPN app with Roddy Jones, Wes Durham. And it's the time of year where we get watch lists. And they can vary.
List season.
List season. It's talking season and it's list season. okay? Yeah. And the ACC players that are on watch list of two of the big college football awards were kind of announced yesterday. And Roddy, on the Maxwell Award list, holy cow, it's almost like a who's who of the ACC. 13 players. It's the most of any conference and kind of shows the quarterback influence, but it also shows the versatility on the offensive side in this league.
I think the big thing that you said there was the quarterback influence. I mean, you look across the country and the ACC is right up there with anybody in terms of the returning quarterback production that you've got. And you see the star power that's in the league. You see some running backs, obviously, with Bam Knight. You see and Mateo Duran. You see receivers with Zay Flowers, Justin Ross, and Ja'Cory Roberson. But obviously the quarterbacks are going to dominate it. And the fact that the ACC has this many on there just shows you the respect that people have for the returning talent in the league this season. And let's not forget, since Marcus Mariota, there's only been one Maxwell Award winner who didn't go on to win the Heisman, and that was Tua Tagovailoa a couple years ago, the year that Kyler Murray won the Heisman Trophy. So the fact that you have this many guys on that list, good indication that you will likely have an ACC player in the Heisman hunt down the stretch.
Yep. Lamar Jackson, by the way, 2016, the last ACC player to win the Maxwell Award. The Bednarik Award has seven ACC players on its watch list. We've talked to Brian Brzee's gotten a lot of play this on this show today. And he and Nolan Turner from Clemson are on that list.
Yeah, but then also Peyton Wilson, the excellent player from NC State, the linebacker. You got Jeremiah Gimmel, who's got a lot of experience. Kalijah Kansi, a guy that we haven't talked about in the last couple of days. One of the most disruptive defensive linemen in the conference. Mari Gaynor from Florida State, a big tackle machine there. Bubba Bolden from Miami, who's one of the best defensive backs in the entire conference, an excellent NFL prospect. So well-represented the ACC is. It's really cool to see when these lists come out and you kind of piece together, all right, what needs to happen. But I've got a question for you, Wes, and I know I'm not the question asker. Usually that's for the voice of victory up in Bristol. But If I were to say, all right, the ACC is going to win one of the two, which one's more likely? You going Bednarik or Maxwell?
Ooh, Maxwell. Yeah, I'm going to go Maxwell.
See, I was going to go Bednarik. I would go the other way. I would go the other way and say Bednarik.
Really?
I would have gone the defensive side of the ball. Yeah. I think so.
Are you thinking Brzee? Are you thinking, I mean, which way are you leaning?
I'm thinking some combination of Brzee, Miles Murphy, somebody on that Clemson defense is going to have a pretty good shot, and I think it's going to be one of those defensive linemen because I think Clemson's defense is going to be fantastic this season, maybe the best defense in the entire country. And typically, you make a couple of flashy plays like Brzee. Brzee's kind of got that knack, you know, that sort of David Pollock knack of ending up with the ball and making those big flashy plays.
Yeah, good point. I just think the quarterback play in the league is such a high level. I'm really do. And to be honest with you, beyond the walls of the league, I worry that it's not getting the level of return that it probably should outside of Sam Howell. I think that Sam Howell is a very good quarterback, but I think there's some other really, really good quarterbacks in this league. That's why I think what Eric did with his list, I was talking about Kenny Pickett. I just happen to think Kenny Pickett's one of those guys that now kind of sees everything come into play for him. And he's not on the list for the Maxwell. I think Phil Jurkovec's on there for a reason, because I think Zay Flowers can take the top off of any defense in the country. It's going to get interesting to watch this list evolve as the season goes on, and a lot of it has to do with how your team does. We all know that. All right, Power Hour is next. Toughest three-game stretches in the ACC. We've got about six schools on here that have signed up for a three-game stretch that I don't think they'd send to their worst enemy. It's a tough run for these half dozen schools when we come back.
Packer and Durham.